And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am very excited about the conversation that we are going to be having today. It concerns an organization that we have talked about before on the morning show. An organization that, if I remember correctly, was at its inception called Better Angels. It is now called Braver Angels. And this is an organization that seeks to facilitate more meaningful conversation, connection, dialogue between people who are caught on opposite sides of the political divide that, let's say, afflicts our country right now. And we have talked about Braver Angels on several occasions with Cameron Swallow, who is, of course, the First Lady of Carthage College and has been very active in this organization for quite some time. And as a matter of fact, is a past coordinator of Braver Angels in the state of Wisconsin. She is co-chair of the Braver Angels Convention that is about to take place on the campus of Carthage College beginning tomorrow and running through Sunday. We have with us in our studios not only Cameron Swallow, but also David Lapp, who is one of the co-founders of Braver Angels. He and several others created this group back in 2016, and he is still very much an active part of this. And some 700 people from all across the country will be coming to Carthage to be part of this convention for the next several days. I should mention as well that Cameron Swallow is deeply involved in a very important initiative called the Heartland Initiative, which is seeking to create a presence of Braver Angels at both of the national political conventions happening a little later this summer. And Cameron Swallow has also been busy as co-chair of this convention, which is about to unfold on the campus of Carthage. And before we go any further, we do want to also say that this convention is not a public event in any way. I mean, it is not exactly occurring behind closed doors, but this is not an event intended for the public, but for those delegates who have properly registered to be part of it. But we thought it was of significant importance, sufficient importance for us to be talking about it today in this way. So, David Lapp and Cameron Swallow, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Greg.
Good to have you back. Cameron Swallow, I've just sort of guessed we've had, I think, three conversations about this organization over the years, and I'm pretty sure our first conversation was even back when it was called Better Angels.
That's correct.
Some years ago. Before we hear the so-called creation story from David Lapp, could you remind me and our listeners about how you even heard about then Better Angels, now Braver Angels? How did you first hear about this organization and desire to be part of it?
Well, it's not fashionable right now to talk about the good parts of social media, but I found Braver Angels first on Facebook. Posts with graphics on the walls of friends of friends. Nobody sent it directed at me. It was just appearing in feeds that I had sort of tangential access to. And it appealed because I was very troubled by the divisions in our culture. And I was also, recently uprooted and replanted in Wisconsin, not in the classroom. I had a lot of time that I needed to figure out what I was going to make of this new chapter of my life. And the skill sets that they were calling for as a moderator were exactly what I already knew how to do. And so I became a moderator for Braver Angels, and it was just the right kind of thing to dedicate myself to during this new chapter of my life.
Wow, very, very good. And roughly when was that? Do you recall?
That was in the early spring and into the summer of 2018.
Okay.
And then I came back in the fall of 2018 giving workshops in Kenosha.
Very good. So we are so happy that David Lapp has gotten up bright and early, probably still suffering from some jet lag, having just traveled to Kenosha from where he lives in New Lebanon, Ohio.
South Lebanon, Ohio.
Very good.
Just north of Cincinnati.
Right. So thank you for joining us today. It's really an honor to meet you and to be able to hear the creation story, if you will, of this group. So take us back to 2016, if
yes,
you
those so, tranquil days.
Yes,
late
right.
2016.
Yes, right. So, first of all, maybe briefly, just say a little bit about at that point in time who you were, what you were doing, kind of what life was like apart from that contentious presidential election.
Sure.
In 2016.
Yeah. I had spent several years, along with my wife Amber Lapp, we were working on a research project interviewing mostly working class young people, hearing their stories about forming families and what they think about marriage, and hearing their stories in relationships and work. And so, and many of those people that we were interviewing, you know, ended up voting for Trump in the 2016 election. And of course, the 2016 election. And being in Ohio there, we were kind of, you know, in the epicenter of of things. So it was a couple of days after the 2016 election, and my longtime friend and colleague David Blankenhorn called me and said, you know, he lives in New York City in the Upper West Side, and he said, you know, it's a morgue up here. Everybody is completely, you know, shell-shocked, just, you know, can't believe what's happening. And I said, well, that's interesting. Here in South Lebanon, I'm hearing people talk about hope and change, you know, people who voted for Trump. And so he said, wow, there's got to be a way that we've, you know, these two people that we've got to be able to talk to each other. Or are we just going to keep on going like this, you know? And there's got to be a way to bridge that divide. So we said, well, what if... and this is a couple days after the 2016 election. We said, what if in a couple weeks we come together and we in South Lebanon, where I live, and we have 10 people who just voted for Donald Trump and 10 people who just voted for Hillary Clinton, and we spend the weekend with each other. And let's see if we can talk with each other rather than just about or at each other. So believe it or not, so I went, you know, hit the streets and, you know, got 20 people, 10 people who voted for Trump, 10 people who voted for Clinton, who wanted to do that, who wanted to spend the weekend with each other.
What do you mean by hit the streets?
Well, I mean, you know, I went and, you know, knocked on my neighbor's doors.
Okay.
And, you know, called people up and so forth and so on. One thing that was interesting with that, Greg, was when I called people, I'll give you this experience. I called somebody from my church who I knew was a strong Trump supporter, and I said, you know, I really want you, I think you'd be a great participant for this workshop. And he said, I said, you know, the only problem is, people on the other side, they're just not rational. You just can't reason with them. So I don't think I'm the right person for this. I said, I really think you'd be right for this. So he said, all right, I'll come. My next phone conversation after I hang up with him is with somebody who voted for Clinton. And I said, you know, I really think you'd be a great participant for this. And he said, you know, but the only problem is, you can't reason with people on the other side. They're just not rational.
Wow.
So the same sentiment, right? And it turns out most times actually when we – this is what happened in that workshop then when we did come together is we were surprised, I think, by how reasonable we found each other. Mm-hmm. We were surprised by how by some common ground that we found. We were surprised by – some of the concerns that people had about their own side. That's one of the questions that we asked in the workshop. What are some concerns or reservations you have about your own side and its leaders? And so, you know, the by the end of that weekend together, it's like one of a factory worker, Zach, who was there, he said, you know, and by the way, this was the kind of thing where, you know, very socioeconomically diverse, you had the factory worker sitting next to the doctor kind of thing. And Zach said, you know, I think we all came together here and it was like there's a big wall that's separating us, and we kind of peeked up over the wall and, oh my gosh, you're right there. I can touch you, right? And we can see each other. We can talk with each other. And we found that we kind of started to like each other a little bit.
Wow.
And then one of the things that happened after that workshop was there was actually an NPR station in Minnesota that found out about what had happened, and they said, hey, could some of you come up and talk on the program about this? So we had a red and a blue from that workshop come and talk, and then you know, other people started hearing about it, and the rest is history.
There you go. So I'd love to hear a little more about that first weekend. So So first of all, how structured was it?
Yes, it was very structured. The workshop design is due to the genius of Bill Doherty, who's another co-founder of Bravery Angels, and he's a lifelong marriage therapist, and he's at the University of Minnesota. So he spent a lifetime helping couples who are, you know, on the brink of divorce, or, you know, the family is in crisis, helping them to see if they can find each other again. And here we have, you know, in 2016, and indeed, you know, still today, we have a country that is in some ways on the brink of a civic divorce, and asking ourselves, you know, can we really live and really live with people on the other side? And so Bill, you know, just applied the kind of skills and things that he learned from a lifetime of helping families and couples to helping fellow citizens who are really differing. So it's a structured workshop with ground rules. Like, one of the ground rules is, you know, we're here to speak for ourselves, not try to represent any outside group. And one of the exercises, we call it a fishbowl exercise. Let's say the people who voted for Trump, they spend the first part of the exercise in an inner circle answering two questions. Why did you support President Trump, and what did you like about him? And then the second question is, what are some concerns or reservations that you have about President Trump? And the people who supported President Clinton were on the outside circle just listening. And then we switch, and the Clinton supporters then went to the inner circle, and they answer the same questions. Why did you support Clinton, and what are some concerns or reservations you have? Now, what happens, there's two things going on there. One is that the important work there is done by the people in the outer circle, only listening, right? But also listening not just to what people say that they appreciate and why they support a candidate, but to some of the doubts, questions, concerns that people have about their own side and the people that they're supporting. And that's important, because most of us are complex, and most of us, you know, don't take everything 100%. You know, there's important qualifiers and, you know, concerns or reservations. So that is an example of the kind of conversation that we had during that weekend workshop.
It sounds, from the way that you're framing it and characterizing it, that it was incredibly successful in terms of accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish. I'm just curious, of those 20 participants, were there some people who, in a sense, didn't get it and or weren't really ready for this, or not fully on board with this? Or, by and large, was your impression that everybody who participated found it, in a sense, to be comparably meaningful?
When we did the, you know, at the end of that, we do a checkout, you know, what are you taking away from our work this weekend? The responses were, as I remember it, overwhelmingly positive, that people, you know, took away meaningful things. But no doubt, it's the case that, you know, for some people who participated that weekend, it's kind of like, okay, well, that was interesting, but, you know, I don't think I'll do this again. And for others, it was like, you know, okay, well, how can I help get this started in other communities? And, you know, I think that's, Cameron, you've probably found the same thing, right? Some people are, you know, are really ready to, sometimes it's because of personal experiences. Mm. You know, for instance, in the second workshop that we did in Ohio, there was, Kim Watson was one of the blue participants. We say red and blue, you know, just for shorthand. Kim Watson was one of the blue participants, and I didn't know this at the time. And she's, you know, she'll be here at the convention. She's very involved, the state leader in Ohio. I didn't know this at the time, but so her husband leans red, and her husband Chris and Kim, they had a pretty strong dispute that really kind of you know, it hurt their marriage. You know, the way that they were going to the Trump, the 2016 election and their differences around that. And so Kim was coming at that workshop from a very personal point of view, like I'm trying to make things work with my husband here in our political differences.
Wow. So the stakes for her were deeply personal.
They were, yes.
In a way that probably was maybe not the case for
Right. But that is one of the amazing things. And like at this convention that we're going to have, I mean, there are, I don't know what the number is, but there are a number of red-blue couples who will be there. One of them is Joshua and Angie, and they are, get this, they're the bipartisan owner, married couple owners of Bipartisan Cafe in Portland, Oregon. It's literally called Bipartisan Cafe.
Wow.
And they're red blue, and you know, she's pro life, he's pro choice. She leans more towards supporting Israel, he leans more towards supporting Palestine, but they're finding ways to have effective conversations with each other and running this great place called Bipartisan Cafe in Portland, Oregon, where, you know, they're trying to be a setting and a place for people to have these civil conversations in a bipartisan way.
Wow. For those of you just joining us, we have in our studios today David Lapp, who is co-founder of the organization Braver Angels, originally known as Better Angels, a group created, as we've just been hearing, back in 2016. Cameron Swallow is with us as well, co-chair of the Braver Angels Convention that is about to take place on the campus of Carthage College over the next several days. So, David Lapp, you've already touched on the fact that the good folks at an NPR station in Minnesota caught wind of this. An interview went over the air, and I have a feeling the process was pretty quick. I mean, I suspect interest in this
was, it was amazing, Greg. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it.
Right. So take us into the thought process in terms of transforming this into a truly national organization. And did you have any trepidation about doing that?
Well, first of all, I didn't imagine that it would become like this big grassroots, you know, people like Cameron, you know, calling and saying, hey, you know, I've got some time and I've got some skills to help here, you know, how could I be of help? And but that's what happened, you know. We were, and it started, yeah, so we were on that NPR station, and then people started emailing us, you know, writing to us on Facebook and saying, hey, how could I do this in my community, and I think I could help. And it was just it was just a flood of interest and goodwill and wanting to be a part of the solution in some way. And you know, honestly, just the couple of us who helped get it started, it was just a matter of just trying to, you know, just trying to accommodate that and just trying to channel that. But it just took off like that. And so, you know, I mean, from my perspective, you know, there are a lot of reasons to lament, you know, the partisan divide in our country, but also there are a lot of really good people, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, who are just tired of thing, you know, the polarization, and just and people who are really strongly conservative, and people who are really strongly progressive, and people who are really strongly centrist. But just think that we can do this in a better way, that we can disagree better, and that there is some common ground. So anyway, so I've just been really amazed by the number of people all across the country who are willing to, like, you know, travel to another state to help moderate a workshop, who are willing to step up and, you know, be the state coordinator for Braver Angels. So it just started coming together quickly with, I mean, like, Cameron's a great example. I mean, contacted us and said, hey, how could I help? To the point now where, you know, there's over 1,000 volunteer leaders, you know, state coordinators, and over 100 alliances. Each alliance has a red and blue co-chair. And the workshops, they're not, you don't have to be an expert, you know, to run a workshop. We have, you know, we have a big, very simple training. For our, we also have what we call Braver Angels debates now, and we train people who have, you know, modest facilitation experience. You know, maybe it's in a university setting or at a or in a house of worship or in business, and you know they know how to, you know, facilitate small group conversations. And if that's you, then you know we train you online, and then you go out and moderate workshops, chair debates. And we're rocking and rolling, and so that's the part of it that's, you know, this depends on is you can't just have a couple of experts, you know, from D.C. or New York or even the University of Minnesota, doing all of this, right? It's really become it's got to become something that we, the people, you know, who don't have PhDs, that we can lead, and that's what's happening.
Very good. It's so exciting. Cameron Swallow, I know we've talked about this before, but I think it bears revisiting, just briefly at least, the fact that one of the things that prompted your own interest in this organization has to do with the fact that you come from a family tree that is divided red and blue. And so, and I suspect that is the case for maybe a whole lot of people that have come to be a part of this, but that is where kind of the reality of this divide can maybe be the most painful or the most uncomfortable. Can you just remind us a little bit about that aspect of this for you and what Braver Angels has represented for you in terms of kind of addressing that particular point of complexity?
Well, yes, Greg, I do think a lot about that double level on which to receive and participate in the work of Braver Angels, because the divide doesn't run just through the political factions of our country. It runs through families. It runs through hearts. And working on that very deep and personal level is what draws a whole lot of the people who are trying to do something, right? They want to be able to take some positive action to heal the divisions that they feel in their very personal relationships and lives. And then there's this other strain that is for the public good, right? And we're upset about what we see around us, and we worry about the future of the nation, and we want to do something that is useful and productive and for the common good. And Braver Angels works on both of those levels. And I've said as a moderator, what is so amazing to me about this work is that it is rewarding whether your workshop audience is 100 or 3. You know, it works on the direct personal level, and it also works when you've got a cast of thousands. So I applaud and, you know, recognize the value of the people working to get Braver Angels into legislatures and finding common ground to give to elected officials and really shift our culture out of the gridlock that we're facing. I admire and applaud that. I also don't want to lose the roots of the deep personal relationships that drew me into Braver Angels originally.
Very well said. I remember from our previous conversations, and we'll be excited to hear about this from David Lapp. I remember on several occasions some points of correction when it comes to, you know, like, what is this about? What is the goal? And I remember us talking about how this is not about turning reds and blues into purples. I mean, and another way to say that is it's not, the Braver Angels does not exist to turn an arch conservative or a fervent progressive into somebody in the center. It allows people to remain, in a sense, on one end of the spectrum or the other, but nevertheless changed in some other way, even if they're not moved on that spectrum. Clarify that purpose of Braver Angels.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's so important.
It's one of the fundamental ground rules in kind of our workshops and debates and so forth, is that we're not here to try to change each other's minds about our politics, but to better understand each other, find common ground where it exists, and most importantly, start to build relationships with each other. But yes, we're not here to try to change each other's minds about our politics. Now, a good example of this is, again, I go back to those one of the first Braver Angels workshops in Ohio. Greg Smith, who will be here at the convention, he was a strong Trump supporter, very strong Trump, he loves Trump, strong Trump supporter, was a cop for a living, and then worked in asphalt as a highway worker. And then he was sitting next to Kuyar Mustashvi, who was an immigrant from Iran and is Muslim and supported and is a blue. Now, the two of them, they came up with this interesting idea of, Greg said, Kuyar, I would like to go visit a mosque with you. And you, would you like to come visit my Christian church? And so they did, and that I just was at their house a couple weeks ago, and they're, you know, friends, and they, you know, they talk about, you know, their disagreements that they have about politics, but they've also been able to kind of appreciate each other's where each other is coming from. I mean, you know, they're getting to know each other, where, you know, they're where they worship. Their stories. And so now, you know, like Greg, when there's something, you know, and he's watching the news or something like that, and he's like, I just can't, you know, those Democrats, why are they, whoa, what is up with them? You know, he'll text Kuyar and say, Kuyar, what's going on here? And, you know, Kuyar will do the same. So that's the kind of thing. And I think Kuyar and Greg would say that they might even say that they've, you know, over the years, maybe they have changed their views on something as a result of knowing each other. But that's not the goal of Braver Angels. The goal of Braver Angels is for the kind of appreciation and kind of understanding for each other that Kuyar and Greg have been able to do. And, you know, and then the idea is that will kind of have that civic friendship. Will have all kinds of happy consequences, including, for instance, you know, I mean, imagine if this really, you know, state lawmakers, members of Congress, we know that there's many people there who are, you know, have friendships across the aisle, but do they feel like they have the permission from we the people, you know, to really lean into those friendships and actually then to work together? That's the kind of thing that we're going for, right? Where we can warm the bonds of affection with each other so that we can do the work of solving our biggest challenges.
I'd like to add to that a moment. I have the image of the good housekeeping seal of approval of a past generation. We want to make it cool for elected leaders to have a kind of Braver Angels seal of approval. We'd like to have them be able to wear that as a badge of honor, like, I can work across the aisle when there's common ground to be found. I can work to overcome gridlock. So we would love for Braver Angels to be part of that effort.
Right, and the idea is, if Kuyar and Greg can do that, you know, our Republican and Democratic members of Congress, state lawmakers, they can do it too.
Right. I wonder, as you do these events all across the country, I don't mean even the convention as such, but I mean all these workshops that occur all over the country, I wonder how receptive are people to the rules and regulations? Because, of course, that's part of what has made this work.
Right.
Is that it isn't just a bunch of people talking in a room, because that very easily, almost inevitably, would dissolve into something not at all meaningful in the way that you want it to be meaningful. So what Braver Angels does, my understanding, is actually quite structured, and I'm sure in a way that, you know, maybe once in a while people might bridle against.
Sure.
I mean, not imagining it that it's going to function in this kind of way. How do you find people's receptiveness to that aspect of what Braver Angels does?
Yes, I mean, people by and large are I think people find safety and comfort in the structure because, I mean, these are some can be tense, you know, and difficult conversations that we're talking about. So having the structure of, okay, I'm going to be able to talk for 2 minutes without being interrupted. Mm. That's good to know, right? Then people are not going to be here to interrupt me. And also that people are here to listen to, well, I'm here to listen to them. They're here to listen to me. That's helped. People generally find that helpful. Now there are, you know, some circumstances, like I remember when we went on a 3-week bus tour in the early days, and I remember we were at a community in New Jersey, and I think maybe it was during that fishbowl exercise I was talking about where you have the reds, you know, sitting on the inside, the blues sitting on the outside. Anyway, somebody said something, and somebody just walked out, you know, and it's like, you know, couldn't take it anymore. So you do have that happen, you know, but honestly, those situations are pretty rare. The more common situation is you. I'll tell you what's a very common sentiment actually is during I had invited it was a Republican who was a leader in this county, and he became perceived by his fellow Republicans as too extreme, so he was thrown out of a party leadership position because he was seen as too extreme by his fellow Republican Party members. But he was at this workshop, and he said, you know, at the end he said, well, this is great. The only problem is I think that, you know, we're all basically, you know, middle of the road people who are here. Mm. And, you know, what we really got to do is bring the strong people on from the extremes here. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're the guy who was, you know, you're the guy who was kicked out from your party leadership position because people thought you were too extreme. Huh. And you're saying, you're finding this as like something, you know, that was, you know, productive and so forth. So
felt moderate to him.
It felt moderate to him. I thought that was an interesting finding. But we should also say that, you know, our formats range from, there's always structure. There's some formats like the Braver Angels debate where they have a definite structure. But there it's more like, okay, we're really going to get into it, you know.
Going to duke it out.
You're going to, so, you know, for instance, you know, Resolved, we should build a wall between, you know, the southern border and the United States. Okay, so then you'd have somebody speak for 4 minutes about why they believe that there should be a wall along the southern border. And then the chair of the debate invites people to a couple questions for the speaker. And then you say, okay, now I'd like to hear a speech in the negative against this. And somebody stands up and says for 4 minutes and then takes some questions and you go back and forth, back and forth. And so that's, you know, more free-flowing, you know, really getting into it. But that's important. You know, we've got some people who really want to get into those issues and really want to debate it.
I wanted to ask you why that got folded into the work of Braver Angels. What exactly prompted it? And it sounds like maybe it was a hunger for this to be more than just that original experience.
Right. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's kind of the Braver Angels workshop experience and there's the Braver Angels debate experience. And I think by and large, you know, reds and blue, well, data showing this, that reds and blues who participate in our workshops and debates all, you know, equal numbers say that they found it really helpful and meaningful. But I think it's probably the case that in general, we find that reds really love to get into the debates and blues really appreciate overall more kind of the workshop experience. And so it's just another way of just, you know, bringing in everybody, you know, just ensuring that we're here, you know, we've got formats that are, you know, conducive for people from all over the spectrum.
Very good.
There's a structure in the debates also. It's not just somebody speaks for, then somebody speaks against. All the questions that come to a speaker must be routed through the chair and spoken in the third person about the speaker.
Ah.
So the, you know, it's a level of formality, mm-hmm. but the effect of it is to blunt any kind of personal confrontation.
Hmm. And we're very clear, right? The chairs of the debate are very clear throughout that the point of the debate is not for, it's not one team trying to, you know, defeat another team. It's we're all here, fellow citizens, on a collective search for wisdom and the truth. And if you change your mind during the debate, you should say that. You should say, you know, as a result of listening to Cameron, I'm came into this debate thinking pretty sure that I was for this, and now I'm, you know, now I'm not so sure. So in other words, it's a collective search for wisdom and the truth, not to try to defeat another team.
Interesting. How wide a range of ages are we talking about in terms of people who are participating in Graver Angels?
There is, I would say, most of the you know, among the volunteers who are, you know, pouring, you know, daily energy into this, probably that leans more towards people who are, you know, in, you know, many people who are retired, for instance, you know, are able to contribute a lot of volunteer time. There's a really thriving college debates program that we have. Oh. And in fact, here in Kenosha, tomorrow, there's going to be a whole symposium bringing together about 100 or so students and faculty who are doing this on their college campuses, where they're having college debates, they're having discussions in classrooms. There's one of our big partner organizations is Bridge USA, and they were started by a red and blue student from UC Berkeley, and they start chapters of students on college campuses to have these conversations. So that's kind of there's a strong college student portion of this. But yeah, many of our volunteers who are, many of them would be, you know, many of them are retirees who have time to contribute.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that Carthage College and UW Parkside here in Kenosha have hosted Braver Angels workshops and debates.
Wonderful. So let's talk for just a moment, and I see our time's getting away from us, but I want to be sure that we have time to talk about this. The whole notion of blues and reds. And, of course, that's been one of the hallmarks of this organization pretty much right from the start. And certainly in the moment in which it was created, I think it's perfectly understandable because it just felt like all of us were pretty sharply divided. Is that ever called into question? Do people ever kind of challenge the notion of labeling people, having people label themselves as red or blue? And if, for instance, you were mentioning that at this convention, people will actually be wearing badges that will, you know, be red or blue, and that also you're being very careful about an equal representation
right.
between reds and blues. But could we just talk for a moment about that notion of that distinction and why you think it is helpful and constructive?
Yes, and we should say, too, that people who really do not lean either way, they are completely welcome to participate. And so, for instance, at the convention, they'll be wearing a yellow lanyard. And about 15% of delegates at the convention won't be red or blue delegates. The reason, for instance, at the convention that we insist on an equal number of red and blue delegates, and we don't just say, well, you know, if you're interested in this, come, and we're not going to get into labeling each other and so forth and so on. It's because for these conversations, if we're going to bridge the partisan divide, we have to know that we've got people from both sides of the divide talking with each other.
Mm.
And not just that, we have to know, there has to be confidence among reds and blues that this isn't rigged against them, right? That
right.
there is equal numbers of leaders on both sides. That's why at every alliance, Braver Angels Alliance, local group, you have to have at least one red co-chair and one blue co-chair, because there has to be a level playing field in order for this to work.
And I suppose part of the point as well is that in doing this, you're not saying there's anything wrong with being a blue or being a red.
That's
I
right.
mean, it's okay to have a position, maybe even a strongly held position. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yes.
So
this is America, right? And we are going to have strongly held convictions, and we can do that and form a more perfect union from that. But we can be ourselves, right?
Right.
And we should be ourselves.
And I guess that's part of it. That's part of it, not losing your own sense of identity and your sense of where we are and where we should be and so on. Cameron Swallow, I want to make sure that we have time to have you talk about something that I know has been very important to you. I think you called it the Heartland Initiative, in which you are working for Braver Angels to have a meaningful presence at both of the national political conventions coming up later this summer. Tell us about your hopes and dreams in terms of that.
Well, it just struck me back when we were first hearing the announcements of the chosen cities for the political conventions that, oh my goodness, it's Milwaukee and Chicago, and where do I live? I felt uniquely situated to be in between those two cities, and perhaps because I'm not from the Midwest, it struck me that both of these cities were in the heartland, and I said Braver Angels should have a heartland presence, and I thought we should have a Midwestern citizens welcome to both of the cities equally, and I imagined parallel mirrored events at both political conventions. And so a committee of Braver Angels volunteers in Illinois and Wisconsin have been meeting once every 2 weeks since September.
Wow.
To work on our presence there. We'll be having a petition drive, and we'll be having a Braver Angels music concert in each city, and we'll be having volunteers of both red and blue volunteers inside both conventions.
Wow.
And we got permission to do that. Yeah.
How exciting. Well, I'll be very anxious to hear more about how that all plays out. Very, very good. David Lapp, in the couple of minutes that remain, explain what's going to happen at this convention over the next several days. I mean, I would assume that it will be something beyond the just kind of the normal Braver Angels workshops.
Right.
I mean, I'm guessing at least the vast majority of these 700 delegates have already kind of been through that experience. But does that take place here on a kind of a grander scale, or are there other things that will be happening this
year? Yeah. So one of the big things that was happening is we're going to be discussing and debating among four big issues that we Braver Angels voted as the top four issues to debate and discuss for us to, and we're going to vote coming out of the convention on one of them, to say, okay, this is the issue that we really want to devote a lot of work to in the next 2 years to see what common ground we can find on it. Now, the four issues are abortion, immigration, free speech / hate speech, economic inequality / economic growth. So four big issues on which there's a lot of division, and we're going to say, okay, coming out of the convention, we're going to pick one, and we're going to do common ground workshops. That's one of our workshops where you get about seven reds, seven blues, and you say, okay, what are the solutions, values, and concerns that we have in common, let's say on immigration? And that think of this as like a citizens think tank, right? You got big think tanks in D.C. and state capitals where you got experts hammering things out. Well, this is an opportunity for ordinary citizens, we the people, to say, you know what? I've got an idea for what we could do about this. And then that gets collected across dozens of workshops across the country, and then we put it together in a report at the end of 2 years. We just did this on trustworthy elections.
Wow.
And we brought together over 100 reds and blues, equal numbers, and we found common ground on the common ground under these workshops has to be unanimous in order to make it. And so we had 23 ideas that we presented about how to build more trustworthy elections, endorsed by reds and blues in equal numbers. And so anyway, so that's one of the big things we'll be doing at the convention, is to say, okay, what's the next big issue that we're taking it on? And then also just interesting conversations about big issues of the day with, you know, red and blue speakers. For instance, we're going to have a conversation on Can we have a better pandemic with a very strong critic of the pandemic response, Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, and a public health director from Marin County, California, who is, you know, supports kind of with the response to the pandemic. So to say, hey, you know, can we go into the next pandemic, you know, with greater trust between citizens and public health leaders and so forth, and how can we do this better the next time? So that's an example of the kind of interesting conversations that will be happening. We'll be having debates, and but then also the most one of the, some of those wonderful things are we'll have, you know, we're gonna have a concert. There'll be time. We'll have jam sessions late at night. In, you know, Brave Angels musicians. There's we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner together, and we're just talking to each other. You know, and getting to know each other better and meeting each other, and so together it's gonna be. It usually ends up being, you know, a time where there's just a lot of. A lot of curiosity, a lot of laughter, and sometimes even some tears of just joy at being surprised at how wonderful it is when we're able to gather together like this and actually like each other.
Right. It sounds fantastic, and I will be so excited to hear all about it once this convention is completed. We do want to reiterate that... For as enticing as it might sound, this is not a public event. This is for the...
Join us in 2026.
Oh, there you go. But for this convention, it is for those who are registered to attend and to participate in this national convention, the fourth such national convention for the organization of Braver Angels. We've been speaking today on the morning show with David Lapp, one of the co-founders of the group, and with Cameron Swallow, with whom we've had really meaningful conversations about Braver Angels on several previous occasions, a past co-chair or coordinator for the state of Wisconsin and co-chair for this weekend's event. My thanks to both of you for being here on the morning show today. I know it's a busy time with preparations feverishly still underway, but we hope that it's a deeply meaningful weekend for everybody who comes to Carthage for this event. And thank you again for being part of today's morning show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, historian and novelist Eliza Knight talking about her lovely novel called The Queen's Faithful Companion. It traces Elizabeth's life from her 18th birthday to just after she ascended to the British throne. Following those events through her eyes, the eyes of a young servant named Hannah, and through the eyes, believe it or not, of her beloved corgi, Susan. That's tomorrow on the morning show. Mostly cloudy skies today, a high of 83 degrees. By tonight, we should have clear skies, a low of 55, and sunny skies tomorrow, a beautiful high of 72 degrees. Looks like partly cloudy skies over the weekend, a pretty good chance of rain on Friday. Looks like Saturday and Sunday, largely sunny and beautiful. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elk.